This episode is brought to you by McDonald's. Not sure you've heard of them. Up-and-coming little restaurant. But they're making it. They're the little engine that could. You know, the moment of bliss when you spot your fries being scooped into the carton and suddenly time slows down. I have that all the time. I love their fries.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
McDonald's fries hit different when they're free. That's another thing I'll tell you. And when they belong to your friends. There's no better feeling than thinking you're out of fries and then you discover extra fries at the bottom of your bag. Or else my son still hasn't finished his fries.
Yeah.
And I'm done with mine. And he used to be weaker than me, so I could just take them.
Yeah.
Now I can't because he's stronger than me.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
There's no wrong way to eat McDonald's fries, but we all think our way is the best way. And I like stealing them from someone else. That's my favorite way. Get your favorite McDonald's fries today. McDonald's. Check them out sometime. They're everywhere.
Ready for an amazing deal? Breezeline's fiber-powered internet starting at $19.99 per month offers the reliability you deserve and security you can trust. Whether you're streaming, gaming, or working from home, we've got all your needs covered with speeds up to 1 gig and our 2-year price lock guarantee. This deal gets even better with 2 free months of internet, free equipment, and free Wi-Fi your way to protect against cyber threats. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires July 8th, 2024. Learn more at breezeline.com.
Hi, my name is Jane Lynch, and I feel chosen and honored about being Conan O'Brien's friend.
You know what? You just messed up my last name, Jane.
I know.
I've been in this business for 28 years, and you called me Conan O'Brien.
And I'm Irish, too. I should know how to say that.
That indicates to me that this doesn't mean that much to you.
It actually does. You know, I'm friends with people I don't even like.
Walking blues, climb the fence, books and pens. I can tell that we are gonna be friends. Yes, I can tell that we are gonna be friends.
Hello, and welcome to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend. I am the aforementioned Conan O'Brien. I really do need a friend. That is not a joke. But thrilled to be here today with our stalwart producer, Matt Gourley. Matt, how are you?
I'm good. How are you, Conan?
I'm doing very well. And of course, the woman of the hour, Sona Movsesian. How are you, Sona?
I'm fine.
Can I ask you a question? We revealed big news on the podcast, which is that you are pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
You talked about it on the podcast. Has anyone heard about it through the podcast who didn't know in your immediate circle? Or did you manage to get to everyone first? Because I would think that would be socially awkward if, say, your mom heard it on the podcast, but you hadn't told her.
Or Tack.
Yeah, or your husband, Tack. He's driving on the freeway listening to the catching up.
What?
And he drives into a barn.
Yeah, there were a few people we forgot to tell. And that's how we found out, was they texted us and they're like, "You're pregnant? With twins? And you didn't tell us?"
Well, this is a good way to find out who listens to the podcast.
I know.
Who really listens.
Well, and also, I mean, they listen because they're my friends and they care about me. Also, I guess they're fans of Conan, whatever.
Yeah, right? Let's do a quick correction there. They can call you anytime, but if they want the pure liquid comedy gold, they've got to come to the fountain. Of
what?
Said gold, Conan O'Brien. And you play a part. You're there with your ladle. And Gourley, you're there with your little cup to get some of the liquid gold and splash it around. But
just a little thimble.
A little thimble. But that's why your friends are tuning in.
You think my friends are tuning in because of you instead of me?
Yes. I think they can talk to you anytime. But they're like, "Oh my God, is he on that podcast with you? My God, God. And then they listen, and then they hear you too. And then they find out that you're pregnant, and they call you. Anyway,
this is fun.
Brief look into my mind.
Yep.
Sona, how's it all going? How's your mom handling this news? She has been waiting. I mean, I've known you for many years, and for years she wanted you to get married. I mean, to the point where it was like, just anybody, you know?
Okay, calm down. It wasn't that bad. It was just, she was getting a little restless, but she wasn't like, "Anything you bring home, just marry it."
You and I did a segment in Armenia where I took you to a woman who matched Armenian men with women. Did you not?
Yes, we did.
And you seriously considered some of those men, and many of them were
no,
in their...
No, I didn't!
They were in their 60s.
Oh, my God. They were all like... And also, I think that they... I think matchmaking is looked down upon in Armenia. And so they had all either gone to prison.
Yes.
They had like 5 kids.
You can probably look up this segment online, but I took Sona to this little house in Armenia in and this woman was showing you people. And every time we... And she'd show us a picture, and it was... this guy who maybe was, I want to say conservatively 65 or 70,
yes.
And looked like he'd been in a fight and lost multiple times. And then she would say, this guy's good. Now there is a problem. She would always say there is a problem. And we would go, what? And then she would talk about he was in prison.
For what?
Well, this is the best part. I have followed up and I said, in prison for what? And she said, I can't remember. He was eating with somebody. And they had an argument, and he stabbed him with his fork. And I'm looking at this guy who looks like a pirate long after the ship went down. And he stabbed someone at a meal who was his friend. So watch what you say at the wedding dinner to this guy.
Oh
so anyway,
God.
No, I jest, but... You married this, the perfect guy, Tak.
Yeah,
I can never
did.
Remember his last name, so I just add an Ezian to his first name, which is Tak Tekezian.
Yes, which is not his name, but yeah, Tak Baroyan.
Yeah, Tekezian.
That's not how Armenian names work. You don't just add an Ian at the end of their first name.
Well, they all have an E-N at the end of their last name, right?
They do, but it's not
I'm suggesting to the Armenian people, lose the middleman, just add an E-N to the back of your first name. So it's Tak Tekezian.
It doesn't make sense.
I'd be Konin Koninian.
Yeah, you could pass for Armenian.
I could be an Armenian man who's very ill. It's very ill. And then I go on that website that woman has. And there's one problem with Konin Konanian. What's that? Very sick. Very, very sick Armenian man.
Is he alive?
Barely. He's barely alive. In this photo, he's actually been stapled to the wall so that it looks like he can stand on his own. Well, I'm glad. I'm glad the word's getting out. We're all very excited. And that will be something that we talk about on the podcast in real time. You know, the choosing of the names. I'm sure that's going to be something.
Yeah, we'll be voting on that, right?
Yeah, the listeners will decide.
What are some suggestions? Don't say Konin and Matt.
Okay. Matt and Konin.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, that one works.
Wow, it's exciting. Is there pressure on you to name one of these children after someone in your family?
I'd like to. I love my dad, but his name is, we all call him Gil, but his full name is Gulbenk.
Yeah, you can love your dad, but... Then there's Come a limit. On. Oh, Gulbenk. So his name is Gulbenk, Gulbenkanian?
That's not how the names work. It's just
We've Gulbenk established that it's the way the names should work. And
okay.
Anyway, no, it's not going to be Gulbenk. We'll figure it out. I'm on it. I'm going to get you 2 great names.
He knows a guy.
Stay tuned.
I know a guy.
I know a guy.
He sells names out of the back of a van.
Yeah. He's got some great names. Where do you think my dad got Konin? Hey, Doc, you want a name? You want Konin? No one will believe it. He'll probably do something great with it.
What if you just name one of them Ian, and then you've got that Armenian suffix just built in?
Ian, Ianian.
It's Ian, Ianian? It's just not Ian, Ian?
All right, listen, this podcast, it needs heavy editing.
Yeah.
And I think we lost our way quite a while ago.
Yeah.
But congratulations, Sona. Very happy for you.
Thanks.
And we'll check in real time. Very excited. And very excited for the live podcast we are going to do as Sona gives birth. Very excited about that.
It's going to be an engineering feat.
Yes, we already got a lot of special sponsors for that one. So
yeah.
Okay,
It's going to be very exciting.
It's going to be nice.
Not happening.
Yeah, all done.
No
standards. Contractual obligation. Have to do it.
Yep. No way.
Yep.
What?
Have to.
I didn't sign a contract.
Yes, you did. Yep.
Michelle Obama's coming back.
Yep. Michelle Obama's going to be there.
The live birth.
Do commentary for the live birth.
Yes. What a great use of her time.
Mrs. Obama, yes, I know you're busy, but we have an ask from the Konin people. Konin O'Brien, the host. Yes. He's got a pod. Yes, you've done it. Yes. Okay. Well, anyway, they want you present at the...
Jesus.
Anyway, I'm sure that's a yes. I'm so certain of it. All right. Well, we should get started. We have such a fantastic show today. Love our guest. My guest today, of course, an Emmy and Golden Globe award-winning actress who starred as Sue Sylvester in the Fox series Glee. You also know her from such movies as Best in Show and The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Now she's the host of Weakest Link on NBC. I adore her. I'm thrilled she's with us today. Jane Lynch, welcome.
It's like a trophy on my mantle that people want to be my friend.
I have chosen you, but to be perfectly honest, I also chose... I think, how many of these have I done so far?
Like three seasons with 36 episodes each.
I don't care.
You don't care at all.
I don't care. I just hope it lasts past this podcast, and I have a feeling it won't.
Listen, if it did, you would be the first. Because what I have found, and that's not my choice, I want to have friends. Mm-hmm. I have found that a lot of people are very hot to trot, to use a saying that's out there with the kids right now,
oh, yeah,
when I'm actually talking to them on the podcast. And then when it's over, it's dead. They drop the mic and they move on.
Yeah, yeah. There's no loyalty. There's no staying connection.
And so I have hopes for you because, as you know, I've interviewed you many times. I've seen you socially. I've come to your house when you asked me not to. I am, and I've been a fan of yours for so, so long. You are mind-bogglingly funny. I'm going back to your first appearances on, you know, 2 and a Half Men. And I know that you had been a working actor for a long time, but when you were playing the therapist on that show, anytime I would see you on camera, I would think, oh my God, she's funny. And this is before I got to know you at all.
Oh, well, thank you. That's really nice of you to say.
Well, it's true.
I hope you mean it.
I'm reading off something I wrote on my hand a while ago. I say that to all my guests. It's been 3.5 seasons, and I say to everyone, I loved you on 2 and a Half Men. And you know what? 85% of the time, it works, because so many people have walked through that show. No, seriously, you have, I think you have one of the best deadpans in comedy. When you are staring someone down, it is absolutely incredible. And then, you know, just again, as I talked to you about this once, but maybe the hardest I've laughed at a television character in a long time was when you showed up as Sue Sylvester on Glee.
Oh, thank you. It was certainly an absolute joy to do, you know. It was one of those things where the guy who wrote it, Ian Brennan, Sue Sylvester was his brainchild. And we're both from Chicago, and we're both from these Irish Catholic families. And I think there's a real dark side that you don't necessarily associate with the kind of the Irish. And, but we kind of shared that.
Yes. Well, guess what? I know exactly what you're talking about.
I bet you do, Conan O'Brien.
Which is there. There's a, and I didn't know this. I didn't know that you are truly, I mean, your grandmother emigrated from Ireland.
And grandfather.
And grandfather. You know, my people came over. We were the only Irish immigrants that got here before the pilgrims. We got here. We had to carry their bags, meet the boat, and carry their bags off the boat.
I was going to say, someone had to cook them.
All right, then. Come on in. Here you go. All right, right this way. That's Plymouth Rock right there. So you've got that hardcore Irish thing, which I know darkness comes, there's darkness in there. And that's what I associate. It's a very Irish treat. It's a trait. It's not really a treat. It's the farthest thing from a treat.
It's not a treat of a trait. It's a horrible treat.
It's a horrible
treat.
Very dark. Freudian slip. It really is a treat to watch others suffer. But I'm thinking of the time, Sue Sylvester, I can't remember the context. There was an episode fairly early on where you let your freak flag fly. Your character decided to just let it go. And you put on a zoot suit and did a crazy dance. I can't remember what the context was, but it was one of the funniest things I had seen.
And I was trying to turn on my boyfriend, the guy who was the local news guy.
And
we played Battleship together, and then I found out that he really loved, he loved like 50s, you know,
a music, kind of like the jazzy, bluesy stuff. And so she put on a zoot suit trying to turn him on, and it didn't work.
And she did this you did this insane dance in a zoot suit. And it was so great because Sue Sylvester, who's kind of an invulnerable character, talk about armor. And you had decided to just put it all out there, and it was just a complete miss.
And in a way, someone who is completely defended would do it, you know, having no sense of how to actually be vulnerable, that you're kind of basically walking around almost nude with absolutely no protection. Yes.
My Glee story that involves Sona, we were in another part of the world far away. Were we in India, Sona?
We were in Dubai.
In Dubai.
Oh, wow.
We were in Dubai together, and I was, I think I was working for the military at the time. And
that wasn't it, no.
Military intelligence, yeah.
So Sona was with me, and we're flying back, and I'm looking out the window, as I do, and I'm checking the map to see where we are, and I see that we're crossing the Russian steppes. And then I see that we're crossing this town, Ekaterinburg, which is where the Tsar's family, the Tsar and his family were murdered.
Oy.
And I mean, we're like, whatever, 30,000 feet above it. You can't really see anything. But I'm like, Sona, get over here. Look out the window. And Sona, look out the window. We're over Russia. Look down there is Ekaterinburg. And Sona was wrapped up practically with a blanket over her head. And she had missed the entire she'd missed all the excitement about Glee. So she was binge watching the whole thing and howling. And I said, push pause. She's like, no, I'm watching Glee. And I said, Sona, we're crossing the Russian steppes. This is the Russian steppes. This is historic. Down there is a Ekaterinburg. She's like, I'm watching Glee. Go away. And like put the blanket back over her head.
Yep. I think I made the right decision.
I think you did too.
Yeah. Russia smusha.
Yeah, really. That's some dark stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, the anger of Sue Sylvester, I know, and I am not an actor, and I don't pretend to know anything about acting, but I know that has to come from somewhere.
Yeah, that seething rage. And that's just, you scratch the surface of me and you will find that seething rage. It's in there. And I'd love to be able to access that and throw a tracksuit on it, which was basically her armor. You know, it was like her uniform.
Right.
And, you know, she lived in her own action hero movie that she narrated in her own head about how she was victimized and wronged, and she was out to save the world. She would have been storming that Capitol on January 6th.
That's what I was actually thinking about, is that everything you're describing.
Zip ties.
Yes.
Oh, no.
In full camo tracksuit.
Right. QAnon. This is all, you know, because Sue Sylvester would be very comfortable in a world where people live through their own false narrative. And
absolutely,
that would be for you.
And she would have found a lot of people to line up with the narrative. Absolutely. And she would be, you know, be carrying the Trump Pence flag, beating the hell out of cops.
So here's the question, because I know you to be a very lovely person. Where does this anger come from? And I ask because I grew up in a nice place, and I was surrounded by nice people, and I had enough to eat. And I remember just being very angry as a young man and thinking, why am I so
crazy.
Mad?
What are you so angry
what
about?
What was I so mad about? What were you mad about?
You know, that's so funny. It feels like it's so far away, but I mean, I devoted the first 4 or 5 years of therapy working through this. And even my therapist said, I don't know where this is coming from, because I had these really great parents who loved me. And there was really no reason for it. But I had like this whole thing about how it was basically about rules. I actually did a character. I did a monologue in therapy. She said, come back, write that down, called The Angry Lady. And it was about how people don't follow rules. You know, when you're driving, you should indicate your intention to turn, and some people don't, and it drives me mad. It was about following rules, and like we all agree on these rules, and we need to all abide by them. We have laws for a reason. I mean, I went nuts about that stuff.
It's so funny that your therapist said, I want you to come back and act out basically a one-woman show. And you're this known, talented, famous improviser.
I wasn't. No. I mean, she knew I was an actor, but I wasn't that. In fact, that character, the angry lady, I ended up doing a one-person show like everybody was doing in the late 90s. And she was one of my characters throughout the show, was the angry lady. And she wore a neck brace and had an eye patch because she was always hurting herself. She was always suing the hell out of someone. And she spoke like this. She spoke into the microphone like this. And I came on to Ride of the Valkyries was the music.
That is fantastic. And I know you have the distinction, I know this is high on your resume, of knowing Andy Richter before I did. I met Andy, it's coming up on 30 years ago when I was looking for...
Oh, is it that long? My God.
Well, it's 28 years, I think.
Because he wasn't a writer. I knew him then. He was just kind of cynical guy who was doing comedy every now and again and wanted to be an actor. And,
yes.
We had a lot of fun together doing our little crazy stuff in Chicago, but I didn't know him as a writer, and I know he was hired as a writer for
show. It's so funny because we didn't have a budget for a sidekick or anything. So, I didn't even know that I was going to have one, but I was looking for writers. Mm-hmm. And so I met with Andy and we sat together in this diner here in LA. He ordered this big bowl of borscht in the summertime, which I thought,
right,
I was
course.
Like, what is going on? Why is he, who eats beet soup, in the valley in the summer? And, he just immediately, I clicked with him and I thought, oh, I love this guy and he's hilarious. Mm-hmm. So I told Robert Smigel, who was the head writer, we've got to hire this guy, Andy. And he went, well, no, he's got to submit a packet.
Yeah.
And I was kind of saying, no, we just have to hire him. Yeah, and I'm sure he'll, Andy did have to submit a packet. And I remembered reading it for like 2 seconds and going, yeah, okay, submitted a packet, let's hire him. and then one thing led to another, but you guys did a stage production of-
The Real Life Brady Bunch.
Real Life Brady Bunch. I remember- I was a writer on The Simpsons, and everyone in the writer's room was saying, you've got to go see this Real Life Brady Bunch.
Really?
It's hilarious.
Oh, cool. It was, yeah, we were at the Westwood.
You were at the Westwood. You guys had done it, started it in Chicago, and then you brought it to LA, and it became a thing. And of course, I'm this 28-year-old bachelor at the time. Constantly, I mean, a different woman every night, I suppose.
Different lady.
So there was no time for me to go and check the show out.
Of course not.
I was in the clubs.
Yeah, of course you were.
It's a miracle I'm alive. It's a miracle I'm alive. But
crazy,
so I regret not seeing the show, but everybody said it was fantastic. People still talk about that show.
It was madness. It was messy and crazy. And we took that beautiful Westwood Theater, which is now the Geffen, and we ripped out all the seats and we put ratty couches in there and you could drink. I don't know if you could, I bet you could smoke. Well, everywhere else we had done it, you could drink and smoke. But we turned it into just this, we destroyed that theater. But it was really, it was a lot of fun. It was just crazy and off the charts.
I'm thinking that other than seeing you occasionally in television things and really liking you, what really turned everything around was you met Chris Guest and he made you part of his troupe.
Yes.
And I got to think, first of all, how did you meet Chris Guest?
I did a commercial while I was doing a lot of commercials while I was in Los Angeles in the late 90s. I was auditioning a lot, let's put it that way. And he cast me in a Kellogg's Frosted Flakes commercial where we improvised very much like what Guffman was. And now Guffman was this preposterous fantasy that I would get to do something like that. So meeting him, seeing that he was the director of that commercial at the Callback, I was so excited. And so we did that commercial, and then he said to me afterwards, I do movies. Maybe we'll do a movie sometime. I was like, yeah, I know you do movies, and I would love that. And then we ran into each other at a restaurant when he was casting Best in Show. And he was getting I was getting pancakes. He was getting a muffin. And,
funny how I do the same thing. I just said Andy Richter had borscht. Now, that's almost 30 years ago. You remember that you were getting pancakes and he was getting a muffin.
Yes.
I always remember that stuff.
Me too. It's always, look at my light went out. Sorry. I do too. And also what people were wearing. And I could tell you he was in a track suit, which is kind of interesting. He
Here's
had just
a,
worked out.
A comedy insider thing that people don't know about Chris Guest is that he's this brilliantly funny guy.
Yes.
And he has made so many iconic films. And so many people know him, you know, say from Spinal Tap, you know,
right.
or as his character in Waiting for Guffman. And when you meet him, he is the most low-key person, yeah. almost like a butler. He's very,
yes.
you know what I mean?
Like the butler from Arthur, you know, just very... John yes. Gielgud. Yeah, it's hard. It's, he was always really nice to me, but I have seen people go up to him and go, hi, nice to meet you. And he just shuts it down so hard.
Yes.
It's like hard to watch.
I did a show at the comedy, at the Aspen Comedy Festival once. And I think I was out there with Jim Carrey interviewing him, and it was raucous. And it was, I don't know, this was in the early 2000s, and it's just incredible energy, or late 90s. And it was just this incredible energy in the room. And I remember the thing was over and I was like, you know, thanks, Jim Carrey, everybody. Good night, everybody. And I walk off stage and there's a lot of just energy and cheering. And the first face I see is Chris Guest, because he had been in the audience and he had walked backstage, and I went, hey, you know, Chris, and you know, when you have that energy, you expect someone to hug you and go, man,
yeah.
you nailed it. And he just went, hello, Conan. I'm in Aspen as well. And I... hope you enjoy your time. Good day to you. And then I moved away, and it wasn't, I mean, he's always been very nice to me, and he wasn't being mean. His energy just, he refuses to raise his energy
no,
knob.
He won't do it.
If you went to his door and knocked on the door and said, I have a giant check here, Christopher Guest, you have randomly been, you just won $1 billion in this completely random sweepstakes, and people were shooting confetti and everything, Chris Guest would say, well, that's, the check can go over there, I suppose. Just leave it at the door.
It's rather large, but
rather large, I suppose. It's,
we'll find a place for
check
it.
Check is more of a prop, I suppose. Actual money will be wired into my account. But I wish you well. Yeah, so I didn't quite. But the brilliant thing is that obviously he saw you and saw what you could do. And then so you're in.
The first one was Best in Show.
Best in Show.
Yeah.
And then are you in A Mighty Wind as well, I mm-hmm. believe?
Yeah, with John Michael Higgins.
That's
and
right.
The new,
that's right.
The Christy Minstrels. New Main Street singer.
Yeah, your character, I remember, had a fascinating backstory.
Yeah, she was a porn star.
Former yes. porn star.
A former porn star turned, you know, very clean, kind of up with people, Christian-y folk band.
Yeah.
Yes.
That probably happens.
Yeah, I'm sure it does, more often than we know.
Yes. We've all yes. done porn.
We all. Absolutely.
Another reason I couldn't make it to your show at the now Geffen Theater. And then, of course, Judd Apatow comes along, and it's interesting because, you know, he cast you in 40-Year-Old Virgin, and you're working in that Best Buy. You have so many memorable moments in that movie, and you have that magical thing where I don't know what your total screen time is, but you made every second of it count. Like, aww, literally every second of it count. You know, that kind of like, it is every time you're on screen, it's dense with good comedy sauce.
Oh, well, thank you so much. It was, you know, that was one of the most fun things to shoot, too, because when we shot in the store, the Circuit City type store, there were like maybe, say, 2 or 3 weeks where we shot in there. And he called everybody in, even if you weren't on in the script, in the scene. So he would just, you know, like a good coach, he'd like pull you in of the game. So it was really fun.
Yeah, Judd has this, and I imagine we're talking about Chris Guest, and then we're talking about Judd Apatow, and these are two people that rely on improvisational actors and finding that natural good rhythm. But they're mm-hmm. also quite different, because what Judd is known for, and I've heard this from so many people, is he practically has, you think of it as like a bench in yes. an NBA game,
yeah.
and he gets these incredibly talented people sitting there. And so you're not necessarily even in the scene, but then he might just say, Jane, jump in.
Exactly.
And yeah. tell me what that's like.
Well, I got thrown into one scene, and I knew I wanted to do that Guatemalan love song
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, oh, we have to please talk about that. Please
yeah,
talk about
I,
that.
I thought of that while sitting around on the bench, and I thought, if I get an opportunity to go in there, and so I didn't tell anybody that I was going to do it. But I saw, you know, when he said, Jane, get in there, I thought, well, I'm going to give it a try. And I did say to Steve Carell, I said, I might sing something. And he said, oh, okay. But that's what it turned out to be, is that you're kind of sitting around and you're hanging out with really funny people, and you get inspired. And that's where, you know, like that idea came. And you know, he throws you in a scene with Seth Rogen. And, you know, it's just the greatest thing in the world because, you know, according to this, the script, we didn't really have any interaction, you know, and then we get to do stuff. So he's really smart that way. He shot a lot, too, the way Chris does, too. Chris always shoots a lot of film, but Judge shoots tons of film. You know, he just keeps going and going and going.
Chris Guest and Judd Apatow know how to use improv. And yes. I think what happened is I think a lot of people saw, especially in the last decade or so, they saw Judd's work and they said, oh, I get it.
I can do that. Yeah.
What you do is you get people to just improvise and that's what kids like. Let's do that. And so what happened is I saw a lot of people who weren't Judd and certainly not Chris Guest make these movies. And I could see everyone was improvising. Maybe improv was not their background, but there was a lot of, yeah, well, okay, let's, well, if you call that a dog, yeah, it looks more like a cat that had a haircut. Well, anyway, and they'd put a lot of that. That's actually, I mean, that was me just making something up. And of course, because of my abilities, it was very, very good.
It wasn't
good.
Very good. It wasn't
compelling. Oh, no. I was going with it was very good. Where were you going, Jane? Ooh,
sorry. No, you were right. That was just really off the top of your head and brilliant.
Yeah. There you go. There you go. Yeah.
And I think what happens that is that you put the cart before the horse and you don't have a story. You don't have defined characters with character arcs and you just kind of throw people out there. Yeah, just, you know, play it loose. And right. I think you have to have that. Like when Chris and I know Judd does this too, they, as they're watching, you know, the day unfold, they're thinking in their mind how they'll edit this. You know, I have an idea. They know the story that they're trying to tell and they know the arc of the characters. And so they always start from there as opposed to just say whatever comes to the top of your head.
Right. And that's what I think happened is I started seeing a lot of movies where people were just shooting the shit on a giant movie screen. And I paid $20, you know, and I was like, no, this has to be done correctly. It has to be used just right. Because it can be misused so easily.
I am always liking it to jazz. You know, really great jazz players. You know, they know their instruments. They know the scales. They understand how songs work. And once you've got that, you know, kind of you've built a little musical prison, technical prison for yourself. Then you can go outside of it. Then you have the right and the privilege of riffing. But before you know the dynamics and the technically what you're doing. You shouldn't be improvising.
So much about improv and being funny to me is watching you in a structure and they put you and Seth Rogen and Steve Carell, you put these very talented people, but you're in a structure, in a story where you do have to care about Steve Carell and his journey.
Right.
And then you watch you guys playing around on that structure and occasionally bending one of the bars or slamming up against the side and maybe poking an arm through. But that's the fun. That makes it feel like that's where the real magic is, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I always say I like to build myself a little cage, a little comedy cage, and then I bounce around freely within that.
Yes.
And like you said, every once in a while, an arm gets out or you bend a bar.
That's what I tell my writers.
Exactly what you just said.
Well, for years, I would
claim it as my own.
For years, I would tell my writers, build me a jungle gym and then people will see me playing on it. And that'll be, and for many years, they built me an actual jungle gym, which was a huge,
awesome.
And they didn't know what they were doing and I would get hurt. It wasn't up to, wasn't well built.
And I think too, that kind of is what draws people, erroneously to want to do this because it looks like you're having fun and it looks like you're playing, but it's very well crafted play.
Yes.
And, the audience, should never feel like, oh my God, what are they going to do next? In a bad way.
Right.
You know, they should be delighted.
Well, they feel comfortable. They know that.
They feel comfortable. Absolutely. That's the difference between a really good stand-up and someone who hasn't really laid the foundation of their point of view and what, and you know, how they're presenting it.
No, I think the first 2 years I was on the air, people would tune in to see, is this the episode where he starts crying? And and once I got past that point, that was okay. But
And the audience felt comfortable. Yes. No, I think the whole time you were great the whole time. Honest to God, I don't know how you felt, but I thought you were great.
I gotta say, everywhere I go, people are talking about Monopoly Go. And for good reason. It's an absolute hit!
Yeah. I love Monopoly.
People love Monopoly. And look, Monopoly's been around for a very long time. It's one of the oldest board games ever, okay?
Okay.
But lately, I walk around and I just hear like, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go, Monopoly Go. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? What are you guys talking about? And they say, we're playing Monopoly Go. You can play it with your family, your friends. It's a straight delight. There's always something new to do. Partner events where you can build on each other's boards and crazy tournaments with team events you can recruit your friends for, or you can just compete to outdo them all on the leaderboards. Mm. And when you're not messing with your family and friends, Monopoly Go is always throwing new stuff at you. They have taken Monopoly to the next level. I didn't think Monopoly had to go to the next level, but they did. There's timed events like massive multipliers for all your winnings and challenges like treasure hunts and or money sprees that have fun new mini games. Plus, with tons of rewards to collect, like stickers for trading with friends and hilarious emojis that are perfect for gloating, there's always a reason to dip back in.
Yeah.
Man, they cracked it, you know?
They did.
So join the fun. Download Monopoly Go now free on the App Store and Google Play. Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend is sponsored by ADT, introducing ADT Self-Setup, featuring everything from motion sensors to Google Nest Cam and the Nest doorbell with a battery or wired option. Your choice. Easily install the ADT Self-Setup security system at your convenience. You don't need heavy-duty tools. And if you do need help, ADT can provide virtual assistance along the way. Self-Setup from ADT grows, moves, and adapts as your needs change. You can add more products at any time, and your system easily moves wherever life takes you. It also features Nest Cams that can tell the difference between a person, an animal, a vehicle, or with the Nest doorbell, even a package. These things are getting so smart. Plus, when every second counts, you can trust ADT's 24/7 professional monitoring. You can view video of an alarm event and verify or cancel an alarm with just one quick tap. Now, everyone can get trusted security from ADT installed your way with no long-term contracts. When the most trusted name in home security adds the intelligence of Google, well, you've got a home with no worries. Go to ADT.com today or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. Google, Nest Cam, Nest Doorbell, and Nest Aware are all trademarks of Google LLC.
Stay connected this winter with this unbeatable deal from Breezeline. Get reliable, fiber-powered internet for just $19.99 per month with all-in pricing for 2 years. But that's not all. Your first month is on us. This deal gets better with a free modem and installation, along with free Wi-Fi your way whole home coverage. Safeguard your network from cyber threats and keep all your devices connected and secured with this amazing offer. Act now. Terms and conditions apply. Offer expires March 3rd, 2024. Learn more at Breezeline.com.
There's something about, and this is another place where I think we could maybe connect or have a discussion, is tall people. You are very tall and a very tall, slender person. And I've always found, and I think I am, well, I am
tall
as well.
And slender.
I was like, I don't know about, you know. Slender goes in and out, especially during COVID. I've put on
my slender goes in and out too. So.
But I've always thought there's kind of a, I think about John Cleese. There's a tall person kind of comedy.
There sure is.
And you, in all the different roles you've played, you're very aware of your height and you use it so well. I don't know what it is. You know what I'm talking about when I talk about
tall
person comedy?
Yeah, I do. And Dick Van Dyke was somebody too. Dick Van Dyke has a very gangly kind of, but he's quite elegant too at the same time. Do you remember Eve Arden?
Yes.
Yes, she was very tall as well. And if you look back at her stuff, you know, she was basically head and shoulders over the other ladies in the scenes. And she just had a way that she moved that was just, it was so beautiful and lanky and funny, you know? And so I maybe emulated that on some level, but I remember, you know, watching her and just thinking that she was physically so funny.
Guys like being tall for the most part.
Right.
Women have told me over the years when I've interviewed them what they hated it when they were younger. I don't know.
Yeah. There were times when I wished I weren't as tall, but for the most part, no, I didn't. And my mother was great about it too. She was tall. So she grew up tall and her mother used to tell her to bend over and not look so tall. So my mom was very instilled, you know, not necessarily pride, but just you know, it is what it is. You know, I didn't have much. And also, you know, I'm gay, so I didn't care if I
was
taller
than the
guys.
Can you go back?
Hold on,
going
just
on?
A second. Am I breaking news here?
Who okayed this booking? Now you listen to me. This is a certain kind of podcast with certain values, if you know what I mean.
I do.
Well, anyway.
But I didn't care about what guys thought. And it wasn't like, you know, I just didn't in... I don't know. And sometimes guys treated me kind of like a fellow guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I didn't have what I'm sure a lot of women have about being tall.
I know you talked about this in your book, but did you know, when did you know, I'm gay. When were you aware of that?
Where I started to go, oh my gosh.
Was it during this interview?
Yes, it was about 7 minutes ago.
More people have awakened sexually on my podcast.
Your podcast.
Yeah, seriously. It's incredible. Bruce Springsteen. I talked to him a couple of months ago and, you know, that it's not his name anymore. It's incredible. So how did you wrestle with all of that?
Oh, it was a terrible revelation. Yeah. I remember when I was about 12 or 13, I learned what the word gay meant. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my God, I'm the girl version of that. I remember saying to myself, like, even in college, you know, no one will ever know. No, because my crushes were becoming undeniable. Yeah. I was not having crushes on guys. I was having crushes on girls. And I remember, you know, kind of on some level saying to myself, no one will ever know. No one can ever know. Mm. And
that makes me sad. That's too bad.
It is too bad. Yeah. Yeah. But you know what? It's all right. It's all right. You know, I think it's given me, you know, compassion for what kids have to go through who don't, you know, live on the coasts or and grow up in, you know, in not friendly places, and that, you know, they still exist, as you know.
Yes.
That makes me really sad for kids. But, you know, being in the theater, it's just teeming with the gays. So I was very much one of many in theater, and people didn't care about it, you know. So that was a good place to come of age in my 20s, was that I was in the theater and with a bunch of people who, you know, couldn't care less.
I was always amazed, impressed that there's something about the human spirit. People, for the most part, will find a way to get to where they need to be.
Yeah.
And I think often, you know, I'm talking about Sona. For years and years and years, one of my favorite people that worked on our show and has since retired is Bruce Brumage, who, you know, I would talk to him about his story. And he grew up in West Virginia, and he grew up, you know, I think in the 1950s in West Virginia. Wow. Yeah. And gay and very different. And I just used to think about, I don't know how he did it, but you can only imagine how difficult that would be. And he found his way to New York City.
Isn't that great?
And he found his way to the theater, and he found his way into working in this thing that he loved. And then he found his way to, you know, our show. And I always thought what a miraculous thing that people somehow, there's something in us that says, okay, this is where I got to be. And, you know, I have to get to the theater, I have to get to where people are making funny stuff, and I have to be in that room with them, and I don't know how I'm going to get there, but God damn it, I'm going to get there.
I'm going to get there, yeah. Yeah. No, when I do you remember the It Gets Better, the Dan Savage program where people talked about, it was basically for kids who, you know, are having a really hard time of it in places like West Virginia, like growing up there, that it gets better and you find your people. You become, you know, compelled to find your people, and you go where the love is. And I'm glad that, you know, New York is still that place for people. Los Angeles, any place where there's a theater community, or but if you know, and if you're driven to be in the theater, that's really a great thing because you're going to find your people. But you know, what if you want to be an accountant?
right.
How hard?
Well, guess
is
what?
That?
They need you know. Look, Broadway desperately needs accountants.
exactly. Exactly.
There are tons of accountants in show business.
Just go where the love is,
man. Now, despite all that, I'm told that you did have a crush on one boy. You had a crush on Ron Howard.
I did.
What era Ron Howard? Happy Days Ron Howard?
No. Yes, Happy Days Ron Howard. Absolutely. I did. He came to Chicago to promote Happy Days, and he was on WGN, the radio show, and I called in, and I got to talk to him, and I was just thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And, you know, I used to dream about him. And John Travolta too. I used to draw their faces. And I don't know why, you know, I guess, sexuality fluid, but, yeah, there was something about Ronnie Howard that was very, safe. He was he was a nice guy.
Yeah.
He would never ask you to, you know, to do anything sexual to him. He was a good boy.
He is. And he is, you know, over the years, I've interviewed him many times. He's one of the least affected, nicest people you will meet in the business. Yeah. He really is that guy. Mm-hmm. And I was thrilled because there was some event a number of years ago, some kind of fancy event. And I got, you know, please, this is your seat over there. You know, they separate, one of those events where they separate the wife and the husband. And, oh my God, I'm sitting next to Ron Howard. And afterwards, my wife said, what did you guys talk about? You guys were talking intently for 2 hours. And I said, you're not going to believe it, but sunblock. We talked the whole time.
Because
we're two pale redheaded guys. And yes. I swear to God, he was like, you know, he gets intense. So he was saying, well, you know, zinc. And I said, no, zinc's a fallacy. You don't want to have zinc in there. No. Here's what you want to do. There's a French cream they make. And he's like, no, I've tried that cream. And we were just going and exchanging formulas. And it was, I thought, okay, you know, everyone I talked to afterwards was disappointed because they wanted to hear Ron Howard stories. And all I came away with was, you know, there's this special chemical that they're working on in Iraq that might be of use.
Yeah, nice guy. Nicest guy.
But so I think it's sort of another gift that comes, and it takes a while for it to come, but people know your rhythm and they know your talent, and people just, that takes years and years and years to get. I felt that way about my marriage too. This is going to be a lot. That's how it felt anyway. So
I'm a grower.
Exactly. Well, okay.
Well,
clearly you've spoken to my doctor.
I feel like there's so much to be said for confidence. You know, that happens. Confidence breeds more confidence.
Right.
And I think that, once I started feeling successful, and not just in the level of the jobs that I get, but how I did in them, and showing up for a job I showed up like this, like I'm going to show them what I've got. And after a while, you develop some confidence, and there's nothing more attractive to people, I think, than confidence.
Yeah.
You know, this kind of where you play down about yourself, and you know, you kind of don't want to hire that. You'd rather just hire somebody who's confident, and they're going to show up and do what they do, and you've already decided you like it or not, or you wouldn't have hired them. But I just have to say that over the years, the thing that has saved me is the confidence that has come from, you know, showing up and showing up and showing up.
No, it's the confidence that, like, Donald Trump had when he was first running. You just knew, like, this guy can do it, you know?
Oh. Yes. but you know what? That's what I think compels.
Did I go the wrong way? Did I go to the wrong place with this?
Yes.
Kind of. But it's the same principle. The same principle applies, I think. You know, I think it's the same thing.
I know what you mean. I my one wish, you know, people – I never buy when people say no regrets, you know, that kind of no regrets. And then
bullshit.
You take a belt of scotch and I think, no, I have regrets. You know, if I could go back and have more confidence, it took me, it took that so long.
Absolutely. I would do the same thing too. If I could just start, you know, didn't have to go through a lot of that self-doubt and the suffering over that and fearing the fear of being unmasked that, you know, it's going to, you know, be revealed that I don't know what I'm doing.
But that's,
I would like to have erased that.
Yeah, but then you wouldn't be you. That's the catch 22. That is the flip side of the whole thing is that I also am a believer in the long arc. Long periods of insecurity are somehow necessary. I can't tell you why.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but I'm pretty sure they are.
Yeah. And if that insecurity doesn't destroy you and ruin your expression of your art, then,
right.
you know, it's a really great thing because some people just, you know, they crumble. They just crumble and, you know, they're done by 35.
Right. Well, we'll know next year when I turn 35.
I'll be watching.
I'm going to have so much work done next time you see me. I have a question, Jane. If I had a lot of work done and it wasn't good work, mm-hmm. but during – and you saw me at a party and it was like, oh, shit, what did Conan do? Would you say something to me?
I probably would with my eyes. I probably – you would know. I probably wouldn't say anything.
And I'd try to say something back to you with my eyes, but I wouldn't be able to.
Be able to move them.
They'd be just plastered.
And I'd be trying to figure out, is it a lift? Is it just too much filler? Is it too much Botox? Is it a combination? What was he thinking? You know how when men get – a facial surgery, sometimes it feminizes them and they start looking like old ladies.
Yes, yes. Yeah. That's the kind I want to get. I want to...
the feminizing one.
I want to get something done that just horrifies people. And then I want to see who do I know is going to come up to me and go, what the fuck did you do? And who's just going to go like, oh, this is really good carrot
You look
cake.
Great.
Well, you are, you're one of those people where I get up in the morning and I think, what am I doing today? And then I look and it says, I'm going to talk to Jane Lynch. And I say, I have a good life. This is a really good life because you're hilarious and you have a very generous spirit and you're one of the funnier performers that roams this spinning blue globe we call Earth. And I'm just very happy to get to talk to you.
Same here. And you're very kind. Thank you so much. I so appreciate it. That's really sweet.
And I'm funny too.
You are. You're very funny. You've been funny from the start.
Excuse me. You just said kind. And Sona, I had to do something.
That was so sad the way you did
it. It wasn't sad.
I'm very funny and you're very kind.
That's what she did. You saw what Jane did. She said, Conan, I said, you're very funny. She said, well, thank you. And you're very kind.
Very kind.
And I'm like, what am I, Mother Teresa over here?
What's wrong with kind?
Have you seen her improv? She was very kind and she bathed the feet of the lepers, but her improv sucked. She was a terrible improviser. She would always go blue, like, we're at a gynecologist. You're like, don't, Mother Teresa, don't do that. Anyway, thank you very awesome. Much, Jane. You're a terrific person, and I bless you.
Thank you. Back at you. Takes one to know one.
There you go. See?
Yeah.
See what you did?
I return it, and it's true.
Yeah. Well, we can't use any of this. This was unusable.
You want to start now?
Valvoline Instant Oil Change is the quick, easy, trusted place for your next oil change. Valvoline's convenient, no appointment needed. You can even stay in your car while they do the work. You don't have to sit in some waiting room, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Their friendly, certified technicians have over 270 hours of training, and they get you in and out fast while performing a thorough, free 18-point maintenance check with your oil change. We got someone here who just experienced this, our own Aaron Blair. Blair, well, how was it?
It was awesome. I took my Jeep Jock Jams in and got a sweet oil change, and I actually brought a book because I thought it would take a while, and they had me in and out in like 15 minutes. It was awesome.
Well, also, you should point out, you can't read.
I can't, but I wanted people to think I could.
Yeah, but I mean, come on.
Yeah, maybe somebody hot is there, and they're like, oh, what are you reading? I'm like, oh, and then you know, now I got a date.
Yeah, yeah, I don't think that's not how people meet each other.
Didn't have time for that.
Yeah, so if you see Blay driving around in his beautifully oiled Jock Jams, give him the old thumbs up, or throw a tangerine at him. Anyway, Valvoline, they're doing it right. Visit valvoline.com/Conan for an exclusive offer towards your next oil change. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all sometimes have issues or things we need to talk about, get off our chest. I have that all the time, don't you, Sona?
I do.
Yeah, and we need people to talk to. And we carry around different stressors. We carry big stressors. We carry small stressors. I was raised in a culture where you're supposed to kind of bottle it up. And I've learned over time that that's not the best thing to do. If you do let things rattle around in there for a while without talking it out, it can affect your life very negatively.
Well, therapy is a safe space where you can get things off your chest, figure out how to work through whatever is weighing you down. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. BetterHelp's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. A lot of people have a barrier towards getting therapy because they think, well, I don't know, I've got to find the person, talk to them. What if it's not a good match? Then it's awkward. None of that. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and then you switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Conan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Conan. This is a little unusual, but I do have a favor that I would like to ask our listeners. And in order to ask this favor, I need to give you the setup. Just a couple days ago, my son and I decided to take a little road trip. You know, we're all cooped up. And my son, strapping young lad, in the midst of a massive growth spurt, he confides to me that he's hungry and he loves In-N-Out. And I think we all do. This is not a this is not an ad, but who doesn't love their In-N-Out, right?
Love it. Love
it. You can make it an ad.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean,
it's delicious.
I know it's delicious, but we're not getting paid to say that, so screw it.
Maybe they'll send us food.
Yeah. Well, please. Delicious. Listen, In-N-Out, if you're out there, I'm just saying, and I'm not getting paid. My son wanted to stop at In-N-Out, and I'm like, A-okay with me. So we want to eat it right then. So what I do is I drive over and I pull into a parking lot that's pretty much empty. And I want to stretch my legs. So I get out and I've ordered some food too. So I put my food on the roof because I want to stand. You know, I've got these long legs and they get cramped up. I hand him his burger in through the window and I put mine on the roof. And I was DJing. I think I was introducing him to the group The Cars, my best friend's girl, which is a great pop song. You know, fantastic guitar lick, just great production. Mm-hmm. And I was going to play that for him next. So what I did is I got out my iPhone and then I set it down on the roof of the car next to my food. I think we all see where this is going. Eat the food in a reverie. It's In-N-Out, not getting paid, but in a reverie.
Yeah.
Finish the food responsibly, leave the car and go and put it all in a trash can that's right there. Then jump back in the car and then get on the 101 freeway headed north. And I'm chugging down the freeway and life is good. And I'm loving it. And then I'm like, it's time to hear that song. And I'm about to reach for my phone and play the song for my son when I hear, kathapa, kathapa, kathanka, thanka, 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 thanka. And I go, what the? And then I immediately know that I left my phone on the roof of the car, accelerated, and it stayed for a remarkably long time. But then just as I needed it, the phone knew it was time to go and went tumbling off into the pitch black night. It's now like 9 o'clock at night and went tumbling onto the 101 freeway. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe what I just did. And I tell my son, and he loves to laugh at me. Mm-hmm. And so he really enjoyed, you know, you're an idiot. He calls me a boomer, even though technically I don't think I'm a boomer, but he's like, you're a boomer. You, stupid. Wish I had a different father. Mom's great. You suck. All that kind of, those fun riffs.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I'll never visit you when you're old. All that kind of fun stuff that kids say to their father.
So specific.
Yeah. You're my least favorite late night host. your podcast is a waste of time. I like Matt. I like Sona, but what do you offer? You know, all the fun stuff kids throw out. But then he's like using Find My iPhone. He's like, I can see your phone. So for a second, we turn around and we go back on the highway to even try and find it.
Oh.
And then I'm realizing, like, I sort of start to think about pulling over on the shoulder of the road. Cars are going by at 80 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And it's like a 5-lane stretch of the 101. And I'm thinking, I'm going to run out into the night, dodging traffic, looking for no, I'm not going to do that. This is dangerous.
It would have been a good story.
Yes.
Conan O'Brien gets hit by a car on the 101 looking for his phone.
Yes. Last words, eat it in and out. Delicious. Worth dying for. So anyway, here's the point. I have one of those cases where you can put
some of your vital stuff.
Oh, yeah, like that.
Yes, holding it up. I have one just like that. I have that case, just like the one Gorley just held up.
I found this on the 101 the other day.
Nice. It's got a French fry in it from In-N-Out.
Not an ad.
You put the French fry in your wallet.
I always keep one fry. Always keep one fry. So that later on questioned by the police and they say, where were you? You can say, I have a fry to prove that I was at In-N-Out. So I'm looking at my wallet and now I'm realizing, I have my cash card and my credit card. Okay, those can be canceled. Damn it. My license.
Yep.
My driver's license is in there and it's lying out there in the night in a phone case on the 101 freeway. And here, Matt, is where I get to the crucial part of the story.
Okay.
My request to the listeners out there. Okay. It's possible that one of you will be roaming the 101 freeway, maybe that grass strip that runs along the side. Maybe you're just roaming the center because that's what you do. There are people that just like to roam highways. There might be a super fan. It's like, there might be someone who just doesn't even care that much about me, but they find my dead iPhone. It's dead. It's been wiped automatically. But they find my license. And here's my fear. As you know, I love murder documentaries.
Oh, yeah.
And I am obsessed with murder. My big fear is that someone's going to plant my license at a murder scene.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, you're fucked.
My fear is that some crime, it doesn't even have to be a murder, but my mind always goes to murder. There'll be some terrible crime, and at the site, they'll find my ID, and I will be arrested. So I want to get the word out now that this is my story. That's why my license is out there somewhere along the 101 freeway.
Now, this is highly suspicious. I kind of think you've already committed a crime and you're just laying an alibi.
Yes. I also think it's weird that the one thing you're afraid of by losing your license isn't that someone will steal your identity.
Who's going to steal Conan O'Brien's identity?
I don't know, but you're...
What?
Tilda Swinton.
What? Old Korean woman is going to walk into a store and put down and say, hi, I'm Conan O'Brien. That's not going to work. You know? No one's going to do that. But what they could do is commit a murder, drop the license there. People love it when a celebrity gets arrested for murder. It's big news. And I think celebrities are more vulnerable than anybody to being accused of murder. Because the paps love it. So I'm putting it out there that if that ID is found at a murder scene, that's my story. Now, what do you say, Matt? You say that you think that I committed the murder already, and that I'm
trying
putting
to retrofit an alibi.
Possibly. Possibly.
This is terrible. What a terrible way to do it.
Yeah.
Why'd you have to
this
bring
is my
in
plan.
And out into
this is
it?
How bad a murderer I am. Mm-hmm. I committed a murder along the 101 freeway in some grassy knoll on the 101 freeway. Then, like a villain in a superhero comic, I left a calling card, which is my driver's license. Then I knew that I could get on the podcast and plant the idea that I lost it because I left it on the roof of my car.
Yeah. Your son will have to be deposed.
I know. Was Beckett even there?
Do I even have a son?
Oh, no.
I mean, what am I making up? And guess what? I don't particularly like In-N-Out.
Oh, no.
And I'm vegan. I only go, none of this holds up. I don't own a car. I don't drive myself. I am driven by my chauffeur.
Huh. And you don't have a podcast. We just tell you do. This thing doesn't go out.
This thing doesn't even go anywhere.
No.
So the whole thing is a sad ruse. But anyway, I'm just putting it out there that somewhere along the 101 freeway, probably nestled under a dead raccoon, is my ID, my
And if anybody
license.
Finds it, should they just send it to where?
Contact us. What should
I
we do?
I think
should we,
if you find a license, can't you just dump it in a mailbox and it'll get to where it needs to be? That's the way it works. If you
well, like for anyone card, else?
Yeah.
It, oh, really?
If you ever find a license, just pop it in the mailbox
and
it'll
get
back
to the owner. Can I ask a question that's going
to
make me sound self-involved and vain? But maybe that's true for you, Sona, or for you, Matt.
Yeah.
Okay.
But if someone finds Conan O'Brien's ID, isn't that going on eBay and then $100,000 later? You know?
You think your license is worth $100,000?
Well, especially if it's evidence at a murder. Yes.
They put the evidence on eBay.
I looked on eBay. I'm not seeing anything.
Okay.
This is crazy because this is a third story of this vein because you lost your wallet or phone that way, Sona, and you lost either a phone or a wallet before we've talked on.
Oh, that's right. You left one on the roof of your car, didn't you?
I did. I did the same thing. So you and I are basically the same.
I'm and scared.
I don't want to say you were mean to me about it, but you did make fun of me for it.
That's right.
For leaving my wallet on top of my car and then driving off, you made fun of me for it.
It doesn't sound like me. It doesn't sound like something I would do. I'm a compassionate person. I worry, Sona, because you're soon going to have twins.
Yeah.
You know? Uh-oh. What if you're like, I'll just put these twins on the roof while I eat this burrito. Time to go.
Well, I mean, babies are resilient from what I've heard. So, oh, man. Do a little tuck and roll. Fine.
I love a tuck and roll. Twins tucking and rolling in baby seats and being perfectly fine. And they land in the center on the side strip and they look over and they pick up a wallet.
Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend, with Sona Movsesian and Conan O'Brien as himself. Produced by me, Matt Gourley. Executive produced by Adam Sachs, Joanna Solitaroff, and Jeff Ross at Team Coco, and Colin Anderson and Chris Bannon at Earwolf. Theme song by The White Stripes. Incidental music by Jimmy Vivino. Our supervising producer is Aaron Blair, and our associate talent producer is Jennifer Samples. The show is engineered by Will Becton. You can rate and review this show on Apple Podcasts, and you might find your review featured on a future episode. Got a question for Conan? Call the Team Coco hotline at 323-451-2821 and leave a message. It too could be featured on a future episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to Conan O'Brien Needs a Friend on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever fine podcasts are downloaded. This has been a Team Coco production in association with Earwolf.
People think the new fresh fragrances from Glade are fresher than fresh, like artist Angela.
You want to go on a journey, disappear by the sea, take a small vacation, dance under sun-soaked trees. Hurry close, take me far to where I want to be. Just pick any day, feel it all drift away, transport your life's a day with the fresh scent of Glade.
They say plants like music. Yeah, no, like really, they respond to the vibrations of it, which means that this playlist you're listening to, the plants are too. You know what else plants like? Organic soil from Miracle-Gro. It's made with all the best stuff like wood fiber and compost. Plus, it's OMRI certified organic, which officially means it's made with superior ingredients. And when you give your plants the stuff that makes them happy, they won't judge you on your iffy playlist.
Hear that, plants?
So go ahead and give them Miracle-Gro.